Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Immigration was hot on the campaign trail, and it's hot in the White House right now. Newly installed President Donald Trump acting yesterday to push the wall with Mexico, a crackdown inside the U.S., a roadblock to refugees, and tough threats to sanctuary cities. This hour on point in our 100-day spotlight, the Trump immigration crackdown and sanctuary cities under federal threat. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is this it? Has the change come on American immigration policy, and what now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Washington is Brian Bennett, reporter for the Los Angeles Times, covers national security and immigration. Brian, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
Can you walk us through the elements of what Donald Trump has put on the table as of yesterday when it comes to immigration? And can we start with the wall, Brian? Exactly what did he do? What does it mean?
So with the wall, he ordered that the agencies begin construction of the wall, which is going to mean reprogramming some of the existing funding in the budget to start construction on fencing, and then eventually asking Congress for appropriations to keep it going. He also cited a previous law that passed in 2006 that was never fully funded, called the Secure Fence Act, and he intends to ask Congress to fully fund that and build out an additional that called for an additional 700 miles of fencing. This is going to take some time to play out and see exactly how much is built, how far Congress is willing to go to do this. Other critical things he did was adding.
So can we stick with the wall for another minute, if you don't mind, Brian? When you say start the wall, now we've all seen the photographs. There's a lot of fencing, if that's what we're talking about, very tall and sometimes wall down there already. So what does it mean to start the wall?
I think he's given a clear order to the Department of Homeland Security to start finding money, probably robbing Peter to pay Paul within different parts of the department to start construction on some sections. I think realistically, we'll see some token contracts go out that add fencing somewhere or maybe some sort of tall wall structures.
So when we say start it, again, there's a lot already there. So start it means what? Start the completion
of a
barrier? Or what does it mean?
So there's 2,000 miles of border. There's already 600 miles of combination of fencing and concrete barriers and the vehicle barriers, which are for fence posts that cars can't drive through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in place. I think Donald Trump in his campaign rhetoric said he wanted a real tall wall across the whole border, which is improbable that will be constructed. I think we have to take him at his word that he wants that to happen. I just think there's going to be a lot of roadblocks put in his way from Congress and just the realities of the terrain of what the Border Patrol actually wants and needs. The Border Patrol has long said they don't, they could use a few more miles of fencing and maybe some walls in certain places. What they really want is more cameras, sensors, personnel.
We're talking about here, the Trump administration, I think, is saying something like $10 billion. Others are saying more than that, and some are saying substantially more than that. The president talked last night with ABC's David Muir and said, in his view, how and why Mexico would pay for this wall.
All it is we'll be reimbursed at a later date from whatever transaction we make from Mexico. Now, I could wait a year and I could hold off the wall, but I want to build the wall. We have to build the wall. We have to stop drugs from pouring in. We have to stop people from just pouring into our country. We have no idea where they're from. And I campaigned on the wall, and it's very important, but that wall will cost us nothing.
The Mexican president was supposed to be coming early next week. Talk from Mexico now that he might not come, and Donald Trump himself tweeting today that if Mexico's unwilling to pay for the badly needed wall, then it would be better to cancel the upcoming meeting. What about a Mexican role in helping pay for this? Is it clear what that would mean, Brian?
Right now, it's not clear, other than Donald Trump's promises that Mexico will pay. His aides have floated different possibilities on how they would get Mexico to pay. One would be taxing remittances sent home from workers inside the United States sent back to Mexico. Another thing that's been floated was when Trump reopens NAFTA negotiations, which he and his Commerce Secretary have promised to do, that they would include payments for the wall in those negotiations. It really seems unlikely that they're going to get money out of Mexico for this construction, particularly with all the Mexican politicians digging in their heels and saying they won't do it. But we'll see what kind of leverage Trump feels like he can bring to the table on that.
Now, he was also talking yesterday about aggressive efforts to find and deport unauthorized immigrants. What does that look like, Brian?
This is one of the most sweeping changes that came out yesterday. He threw away the Obama-era deportation priorities, which focused on deporting people convicted of crimes and people who recently entered the United States. And he greatly expanded the priorities for people who can be deported to include people who've just been charged with crimes but not convicted, people who, in this vague formulation, have committed something that could be charged for a crime. In addition to, he also included people who have committed welfare fraud, but obviously without a conviction. So these really opens the door for immigration agents to deport a lot more people and a lot more people from the United States.
He talked yesterday about, he said, getting the bad ones out. Here was the president.
We are going to get the bad ones out, the criminals and the drug deals and gangs and gang members and cartel leaders. The day is over when they can stay in our country and wreak havoc.
All right. The President Obama went after criminals, but you're saying Donald Trump talks about the bad ones, but it's a bigger screen than before?
It is. It's a much, much bigger universe of people that he's talking about. Donald Trump did focus, and his aides have focused, on one particular area of people who come from countries that won't receive them when they're deported. And they're it's not a huge number of people. It's not millions of people, but it is in the thousands. Over the last 3 years, about 8,000 people who were served time in jail for crimes were released by court order into the public in the United States because their countries wouldn't receive them back. And Trump said that time is going to end. He's going to force those countries to receive those people back.
He also talked about the manpower that we put into this enforcement. Here he was talking about ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Officers.
Empowers ICE officers to target and remove those who pose a threat to public safety. Calls for the hiring of another 5,000 Border Patrol officers. Calls for the tripling the number of ICE officers.
What about the resources that President Trump appears to be ready to put into this effort to crack down, Brian?
So Border Patrol agents, the Border Patrol's doubled in the last decade. It's now at about 21,000 Border Patrol agents. This would bring it up to 26,000 Border Patrol agents. It's going to be a real hard hiring challenge for the Border Patrol to hire that not large number of people. And they had a lot of problems when they doubled the size of the Border Patrol in the last 10 years of people coming in who had criminal ties that got through the vetting system and later became corrupt officers.
That's so, an amazing number, 26,000. That is huge.
It is a really big number. We'll see how that hiring plays out and whether they can actually get the full appropriations from Congress to pay for that.
But in terms of manpower being deployed, what kind of increase will this mean, net-net?
Well, I mean, it'll mean more manpower on the border, more ability to respond to sensors that go off or cameras that see things on the border. As far as the actual reality on the ground on the border, studies have already shown that the migration from Mexico, for example, is net zero. As many people are going back as are coming in. A lot of the Central American migrants that are coming to the border right now are surrendering themselves to Border Patrol agents, so this wouldn't resolve that issue because they're seeking asylum and protection. It is unclear as to what the actual impact could be. I mean, I suppose they it could end up stopping more drugs from coming in, stopping more drug shipments from crossing across the border.
And what about ICE agents around the United States, away from the border? You're talking about 5,000 more. How big an increase is that?
That's a very big increase. He's going to triple the number of deportation agents, these ICE agents around the country. It's going to go from 5,000 now to 15,000, and that's going to have those agents are all going to need something to do. So they're going to be out finding people who fall under Donald Trump's much widened priorities for deportation, which is going to mean most likely more raids on workplaces, on people's houses. You're probably going to see more footage on the nightly news of families upset that their father, who was here illegally, was deported and was the wage earner for the family, and his children are American citizens. You're going to see more of that.
And local police departments, there'll be a new relationship between the federal government and those. What's that?
Well, we'll have to see how that plays out. So the there are over 300 local police departments and state police that currently refuse to hold people in jails at the request of immigration officers. Those cities are called sanctuary cities. And Donald Trump has promised to crack down, to withhold federal funding from those places. He's also going to reinstitute a really controversial program called Sanctuary Cities that makes it easier for ICE officers to find people who've been booked into jails.
Not Sanctuary Cities. It's called Safe
Cities.
Right.
Safe, it's called Secure Cities. Thank you. Secure Communities.
Secure Communities. And it does what?
So Secure Communities, whenever someone's booked into a local jail and fingerprinted, that fingerprint already goes to the FBI criminal database. Under Secure Communities, that fingerprint goes to immigration officers as well, and they can go to the jail and try to pick someone up for being here in the country illegally.
Is this it? Is this the big change, Brian? Is it dawning right now?
I think we're going to see it play out over the next couple months, and we're going to see a lot more deportations and immigration raids.
Maybe years. Brian Bennett, reporter with the Los Angeles Times, joining us today from Washington. Thank you so much, Brian.
Hi, happy to be on the show.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about President Trump's immigration policy, the wall, enforcement, and sanctuary cities. A bunch of announcements yesterday, more coming, we're told, today. You can join us this hour. What do you think of Donald Trump's tough new policies rolling out right now? Is there any surprise here? Is it not just what he said he would do? Is this putting America first? Is this the way you want to be first? And do you live in a sanctuary city? Are you proud that your city is a haven? Are you not sure where that's all headed now? Over the last couple of months, a lot of defiant talk since Donald Trump's election from mayors of sanctuary cities. Here in November, after the presidential election, was Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel reassuring citizens about Chicago's status as a sanctuary city.
To be clear about what Chicago is, it always will be a sanctuary city. To all those who are, after Tuesday's election, very nervous, is filled with anxiety, has been spoken to, you are safe in Chicago. You are secure in Chicago, and you are supported in Chicago.
That Chicago message for undocumented immigrants. Here we are in New York. Mayor Bill de Blasio said he would defend undocumented immigrants and their families.
We are not going to sacrifice a 500,000 people who live among us, who are part of our community, whose, you know, family members and loved ones happen to be people, in many cases, who are either permanent residents or citizens. We're not going to tear families apart. So we will do everything we know how to do to resist that.
And here in November, lots of immigrants and activists confronted Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, saying she wasn't doing enough to protect Washington's status as a sanctuary city. Here was her response.
To everybody assembled here, D.C. is a sanctuary city, period.
That, the capital of the United States. And now Donald Trump saying, hey, your federal funding is going to be in trouble. Alan Gomez joins us right now, immigration reporter with USA Today, joins us from Miami, Florida. Alan Gomez, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
First of all, what is a sanctuary city?
Sanctuary city is a pretty broad definition, but
In essence, it describes any city that has as a policy some level of sort of they refuse to comply with certain federal immigration laws. We have a pretty broad range of these from San Francisco, Chicago, New York, where they will not communicate in any way with federal immigration authorities. They won't hand over anybody in their jails to ICE agents. Then you have sort of this next tier of cities like Los Angeles, Austin, Miami, that do comply to some degree and do hand over suspects that are charged with serious crimes like murder and any other violent offenses, but won't hand over people just simply charged with lower level crimes. And then you have a lower rung of cities that basically they communicate with ICE, but they refuse to hold on to detainees any longer than they have to for the sole purpose of holding on to them so that ICE can come and pick them up.
Okay. And yesterday, Donald Trump talking about this, no fan, saying that the federal government would take a hard stance. Here was the president.
Block funding for sanctuary cities. We block the funding. No more funding. We will end the sanctuary cities that have resulted in so many needless deaths. Cities that refuse to cooperate with federal authorities will not receive taxpayer dollars.
Now, forgive me, that was actually a tape from last summer in Phoenix, Arizona, candidate Trump laying it out. Yesterday, Alan Gomez at the Department of Homeland Security, was it the same message on federal money and sanctuary cities?
Absolutely. I mean, the Trump administration has been very clear that they were this has been sort of a campaign theme of theirs throughout. And we saw it laid out in the executive orders that he signed yesterday at the Department of Homeland Security. He basically directed the federal government to identify federal funds and specifically the Departments of Homeland Security and Justice to figure out funds that they can withhold from these cities as punishment. These grants cover a very, very broad range of issues from reimbursing them for detaining undocumented immigrants, to community-oriented policing services, to Violence Against Women Act grants. There's some issue with the federal government. Some of these grants, the executive can absolutely cut off because it's in their discretion to do so. Some of these are based on formulas set by Congress, so he's going to need some congressional help to withhold some of this funding. But as we've heard from Republican leaders in both chambers, they seem to be pretty well on board with that. So it looks like they're going to be in line to lose hundreds of millions of dollars if they continue and persist on acting as sanctuary cities.
And this was cities all over the place, 300 in total under this rubric, this umbrella of sanctuary city. Boston Mayor, right here, Marty Walsh, yesterday at a press conference said undocumented immigrants, welcome in Boston.
I want to say directly to anyone who feels threatened today or vulnerable, you are safe in Boston. We will do everything lawful in our power to protect you. If necessary, we will use City Hall itself to shelter and protect anyone who's targeted unjustly.
We'll use City Hall itself like sanctuary. Talk about sanctuary. Alan Gomez, can cities really resist if the federal money is actually begins to be cut off? You're talking hundreds of millions here, as you say.
Well, I think a key word that he said there was that they will do anything lawful to protect them. The status of law right now when it comes to these sanctuary cities is pretty mixed. On the one hand, federal courts have found that local jails are under no legal obligation to hold on to somebody solely for ICE, solely because they're being investigated by ICE. A couple of federal courts have ruled that. And so right now, that's why a lot of these cities have been adopting these policies, pointing to those lawsuits, saying we don't have to hold anybody longer than we have to just for ICE. But on the other side of the coin, the federal government has ruled, even President Obama's Justice Department ruled that local law enforcement agencies are required by federal law to at least share information about people in their custody. That's where a lot of these sanctuary cities are crossing the line in the eyes of the Trump administration. And so we've seen that law cited throughout his executive order saying, if you don't at least share information with us, that's when we're going to come after you. So there's two sides to this coin, and the legal questions, I think, will absolutely be litigated, because immigration advocacy groups already have their lawsuits lined up and ready to go. And the Department of Justice under the Trump administration will absolutely go after a lot of these cities if they maintain their sanctuary city policies.
Alan Gomez with USA Today there in Miami. Please stand by for a second. I want to go to a mayor of an American city that has declared itself a sanctuary city and hear what she's thinking about on the morning after the Department of Homeland Security appearance of President Trump yesterday. Mayor Suzanne Jones joins us right now from Boulder, Colorado. 3 weeks ago, the city made it official, approved an ordinance affirming Boulder's sanctuary status. Mayor Suzanne Jones, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Are you going to stick with your sanctuary city status? Can you afford to if the Trump administration begins to clamp down on federal funding coming to cities like Boulder?
We do intend to stand by the ordinance we just passed, which codifies how we have always treated immigrants and intend to continue to treat them in the future. We're not sure of, you know, we're still looking at what this executive order means, but we think we're on firm legal ground, and we think it's important to make clear that we're going to protect the constitutional rights of everyone in our community to the best of our abilities.
And where do you draw the line in cooperation if ICE comes to you and wants something, wants someone from your jails? What is the Boulder policy that will make you a sanctuary city? Where do you draw the line, Mayor?
We draw the line at the issue of immigration status. I mean, we work with ICE on other issues, right? Trafficking or other issues. So where we draw the line is we're not going to inquire about immigration status. We are not going to enforce just on immigration status, and we are not going to cooperate in investigations just having to do with immigration status. That's where we draw the line.
Your jail division chief, Jeff Goetz, says if there's a warrant for an individual, just like any other person wanted on a crime has a warrant, they'll be treated the same as anyone, but we will not hold somebody on an ICE detainer. Alan Gomez, you hear Mayor Jones in Boulder, Colorado. Does that put her in the sort of target zone for the new Trump policy?
In some respect, yes. So as she's describing, they will not hold people specifically for ICE. As we were just talking about, mm-hmm. courts have ruled that local governments, local police departments can absolutely do that. That's a request. That's not a requirement that they have to comply with. Where they might run into some issue is there is a federal law that requires any federal, state, and local government to at least share immigration information with the Fed. So that's where I think we're going to see a lot of the legal battles over the next couple of years.
We've got callers for the two of you, if I may, Mayor Suzanne Jones in Boulder and Alan Gomez in Miami. Hunter in Texas, Austin, Texas. Hi, Hunter. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Love the show.
Thank you.
So I live in a sanctuary city, and I know people, co-workers of mine that I've worked in the restaurant industry with, they've been pulled over and been targeted by ICE. And, you know, one of my co-workers, he got arrested for DUI, and he's been held and transferred around jails around Texas from Travis County. Now he's in Pearsall, Texas, which is near the border. He's being held for 3 months on a nonviolent crime by ICE, and he was already in a sanctuary city before Trump was elected.
What was the crime, Hunter? Can you tell us?
He was driving under the influence of alcohol.
Okay.
And it was his second offense while we were working together. He did have one already. So a second-time offender for DUI who was in a sanctuary city his whole life. He came here under, I forgot the children's law, when you're a child born in the United States.
Right. DACA.
And he came here, was in a sanctuary city. Yeah, mm-hmm. He came here and was in a sanctuary city, but has been held by ICE and moved around now he's out of the sanctuary city.
So what's your question, Hunter?
My question is it still possible to target people in sanctuary cities despite it being, you know, like a sanctuary city? Like, why is it possible that it's already been happening? And how are you going to turn City Hall into a sanctuary when you can get pulled over and moved out of this county immediately?
Yeah, let us pick it up. Mayor Jones in Boulder, Colorado, if you've got somebody who's undocumented and they've got a DUI, can they end up out of Boulder in the custody of ICE?
Well, the one thing to keep in mind is that a lot of this information, if you get booked for a crime, It's public information. It goes into the court records. ICE can see that. And so one thing we want to make sure is just because you declare yourself a sanctuary city doesn't mean that you offer additional protections against federal laws, right? It just means that you are not going to cooperate and use local resources to enforce immigration laws.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're an embassy or church where we can actually offer sanctuary. It means that we are going to do what we can to protect the rights of citizens, but there are federal laws, obviously, that we have to comply with.
Are you absolutely confident that under a Trump administration interpretation, you won't feel the pressure of threatened funds cut off to become more compliant with ICE demands?
Well, of course they're going to put pressure on us. That's the whole point of this, right? They're trying to scare us to doing things that we don't believe make sense, and we're not even sure, you know, we're not sure he's on firm legal standing right now. I think the whole point of this is to try to bully cities into doing things that they don't want to do. Like I said, we'll take a look at it. We get about $8 million in federal funding a year, mostly for transportation projects. So obviously that would hurt to lose, but it also wouldn't break us.
Why did Boulder go to sanctuary city status? What's the principle here that you're acting on, or the practical motivation?
Well, that immigrants are a very valued members of our community, whether they're documented or not. And they pay taxes that support city services like everybody else. And we as local, you know, our local police officers can't keep people safe if they're scared to call when there's a fire, or there's a crime, or they need assistance. The system doesn't work that way if people are scared of local police. And so we think it's very important to state unequivocally that we will do what we can within our legal grounds to protect the rights of everyone in our community.
Mayor Jones, Alan Gomez, stand by. Carlos is calling from Boston. Hi, Carlos. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very, very important point to make. The federal government gets funded by the states that pay federal taxes. Now, President Trump is saying, we're not going to give you federal funding. Well, maybe the states that have these cities that are protecting citizens and are protecting human beings, they are working very hard and come to this country for the American dream. Maybe these states should not pay federal taxes.
Well, I mean, individuals pay those taxes up directly to the federal government. You're saying states should tell their citizens not to pay their federal income taxes to draw the line there?
Well, if they're going to take the federal funding from the states like Massachusetts or like every other state that says, you know, we're human beings, we need to help each other, yes, I will say do not pay federal taxes. Do not help the federal, and we will see where they get the funding from.
Carlos, are you an immigrant? Are you a citizen? What's your status?
I'm an immigrant. I came to this country about 15 years ago. I became a green card holder legally, and then I became a citizen. I'm a proud American. I love my country. I was not born here, but the day I became an American, I pledged allegiance to this country and this country only.
Carlos, I really appreciate your call. I want to take that to Mayor Jones. If it really gets down to it, who's got the leverage here, Mayor Jones? If the federal government really decides to get tough under President Trump, can cities and states resist that?
I think the backdrop is U.S. Constitution and what is legal. You mentioned earlier that if people aren't wanted for a crime, we are in violation of the Constitution to hold them under ICE detainers. That is the law as I understand it right now. So obviously, we're not going to violate the U.S. Constitution. So that, to me, is the backdrop, and I imagine some of this will be decided in court.
Mayor Suzanne Jones in Boulder, Colorado, Sanctuary City. Thank you very much for being with us today, Mayor Jones.
My pleasure.
Alan Gomez, how do you see the power ratio here between the cities and the federal government, if that's what it comes down to?
Well, it's, you know, federal courts have generally sided with the federal government when it comes to immigration law. We've seen that play out in recent years as President Obama has tried to attack some of these states that tried to implement anti-immigration policies. And to some degree, I think we're going to see that still under President Trump, because it's a matter of national security. It's a matter of deciding who gets to be in this country. And those are generally been reserved to be federal protections or federal responsibilities. But there is definitely plenty that these states and locals can do. They're not immigration agents, so there's definitely some that they can fight back.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, knowing that incredible ingredients make incredible meals. They follow the highest quality standards and deliver recipes along with just the right amount of ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. New recipes are created each week, so you can customize your recipes each week. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/onpoint. You don't have to spend time at the grocery store. Make great meals in under 40 minutes. There's no commitment, so pick what you want at blueapron.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about President Trump's immigration policy, the wall, enforcement, and especially sanctuary cities, now under the gun, as Donald Trump, President Trump, says, we will cut off federal funding from cities that do not cooperate in the way he would like to see with ICE in charge of course, immigration in this country. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Will we now see a big roundup of undocumented residents, families torn apart, workers ejected? Do you want that? How will President Trump's immigration policies change America? What's driving the change? Alan Gomez is with us, immigration reporter for USA Today. And I want to bring in a couple of guests to look at the sanctuary city's posture here and where it's likely to go. With us from Washington, D.C. is Avida Mousavian. She is policy attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, focuses on security policies and immigration enforcement, an advocate for sanctuary cities. Avida Mousavian, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Julie Myers Wood, former Assistant Secretary, Homeland Security for Immigration, Customs Enforcement. She's now at Guidepost Solutions. Julie Myers Wood, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
Julie, what do you think should happen with sanctuary cities? Is there a place for that in the administration of Donald Trump? Is there a place for that in the American legal system?
Well, certainly the law as it is, as Alan pointed out, already says that cities and states have to give information to ICE and have to notify things for ICE. And so what I think the Trump administration is trying to do through this order is to take a look again at some of the problems that have been caused by cities and states not cooperating with ICE and try to deal with the public safety issue. And let me just say, I know that for everyone, it is, at the end of the day, a public safety issue. No one wants those that commit serious crimes to kind of be out on the street. Everyone wants to work together to ensure those individuals, if they're not here lawfully, are removed. And the question is kind of how do we do that, and can we do that in a way that works not only for federal law enforcement but also for the needs of state and local law enforcement?
Avida Mousavian, is this a public safety issue in your view?
The public safety component, from our perspective, is making sure that law enforcement can really focus on its primary mission, which is to keep their community safe. And when they have members of their community who are too afraid to report crimes that they were the victims of or witnesses to because they view local law enforcement as playing the role of federal ICE agents, then that completely undermines the ability of local police to keep all their community members safe.
Do you think that people who have not committed serious crimes are likely to be swept up in the Trump initiative here? Or is it really, is it a public safety issue because it will be so targeted at those who have been serious criminals?
Well, despite the rhetoric that he's used, the actual written language of the executive order drastically reforms the enforcement priorities, essentially making anybody who's entered unlawfully, anybody who's merely been accused of a crime. So imagine a scenario where there's a domestic violence victim, and in the heat of the moment, there may be a cross complaint that's filed. The charges are later dropped. So in under this scenario of the new executive order, anyone merely charged of a crime, regardless of the final resolution of the case, would be considered an enforcement priority, as would anyone who's committed acts that constitute a chargeable offense, even if they've never been charged. So this is unchartered and certainly unconstitutional territories as far as we're concerned.
Alan Gomez, we've got this clause in here saying that among those listed as priorities for removal are those who have, quoting here, engaged in fraud or willful misrepresentation in connection with any official matter or application before a governmental agency. What does that mean, Alan? If you apply for a job or a that sounds like you just misrepresenting your status could be enough to get you on the removal list.
I think that one's targeting people who misrepresent their status or misrepresent their identity. There is a lot of undocumented immigrants over the years who have used fake identities to be able to get work. And so that falls into that category. As you're talking about, there is, if you keep running down this list of new enforcement priorities, there's yet another one that really struck me when I read it. And it says that in the judgment of an immigration officer, if the person otherwise poses a risk to public safety or national security. I'm not quite sure how much more broad you can get than that. And when they say immigration officer, that doesn't just mean a federal ICE agent. That could mean local police that have been deputized by ICE to carry out immigration enforcement. So basically, you're creating a very, very broad definition of people who've been just charged with crimes, as you mentioned, who've misrepresented their identity or given some false information at any point, or who otherwise pose a risk to public safety. And I think that's why you're hearing so much concern out there from immigration advocates and from undocumented immigrants themselves, that just about anything they do could in some way be interpreted as getting them into these enforcement priorities.
Julie Myers-Wood, that's such a broad definition. Are you persuaded that this would still be focused on real public safety issues, or could this be the opening of the way for the grand scale deportation of refugees? Donald Trump talked on the campaign trail about, you know, millions, maybe 11 million to be gone.
Well, certainly, I think the president's statements about immigration have changed even since he's been elected. Last night to ABC News, he talked about kind of having a big heart with respect to those individuals who came here when he was children. I actually found it encouraging that there was not specific language already dealing with DACA. Certainly, our immigration system broadly is terribly broken. And I think over the last 8 years, those who've done immigration enforcement have felt that the pendulum has swung too far in terms of not being able to enforce immigration laws for someone, for example, who is charged with a very serious crime but got off on a technicality. Is that a person that should be a priority? But I want to focus just for a second on the sanctuary city piece. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding, reading the language of the executive order there, that it really is focused on the relationship between ICE and jails and correctional facilities. And that's where the focus is. And the executive order gives the Secretary of Homeland Security the ability to designate entities as sanctuary cities. And I think we're going to have to watch and see how broadly does the Secretary interpret that. As Alan noted, there's a whole range of cooperation non-cooperation that can exist in terms of sanctuary cities. What is the Secretary going to view? Is he only going to view an entity as a sanctuary city if it refuses to ever notify ICE about any issue, or is it going to kind of go a little bit further? And I think that's where the sanctuary city piece really, A, is targeted, but B, there's a lot of open questions.
Well, Alan Gomez, where's the line here, the sort of red line for serious sanctuary cities where they don't want to cooperate with the federal government on this?
I mean, the line, as best as I can have been able to figure out over these last couple of years, is that if you don't share any information at all with the federal government, then you may be in violation of federal law. But once you take that next step of saying, okay, not only are we not going to share information, but we're not even going to hold anybody for you, that's where cities and states have some power. That's where courts have ruled in their favor. There's been a couple of court decisions that have found that that local jails are under no legal obligation to hold somebody any longer than they have to based solely on a request from ICE. They're basically saying you're holding them on suspicion of something. There's no probable cause. There's no court order. There's no warrant. And so they can draw that line, it seems. But I'm pretty certain the Department of Justice under a Trump administration is going to appeal that ruling. So we're in a lot of gray area here when it comes to the legality of these sanctuary cities.
A lot of callers for the three of you. Gary in Lexington, Kentucky. Gary, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. It seems to me that every single city and community in the United States should be a safe place for any immigrant to come into our country and follow the legal procedures to become a citizen of the United States. However, I don't understand why we're in, and I have no desire to see a sweeping move to remove immigrants from our country.
Okay.
I don't understand why we're not talking about the ravage of drugs in our communities and how they're tearing families apart. I don't want to see legal immigrant families torn apart either, but we at least have some movement to begin to address the flow of drugs as just one example into our country that is in Kentucky is touching nearly every family and is even destroying some of our smaller communities altogether.
Yeah. I appreciate your call, Gary. Avidem Lusavian there in Washington. You hear Gary's concern. He says, all right, let's be compassionate, but let's also get real about the drug a drug problem he sees firsthand.
Well, I think his point speaks to the need for law enforcement at every level to be able to prioritize where it uses its resources. And clearly with the executive order yesterday, we've seen a dismantling of any type of prioritization with anyone, regardless of what perceived threat they might pose to a community being an enforcement priority for the Department of Homeland Security. I want to go back just to the point, though, about what it means to be a sanctuary city, because I want to be really clear. There's no affirmative obligation for local law enforcement to collect any information regarding a person's immigration status or citizenship. And the federal law only says that you can't have a policy that prohibits information being sent to the federal government if it specifically pertains to the person's immigration or citizenship status. It's a very narrow, narrow law. It does not require local governments to ask about the citizenship or immigration status, and it does not put law enforcement in a position where they're required to provide any and all information that the federal government is asking for. So before, when people were asking, you were asking your guests, you know, can local governments afford to risk losing federal funding? The reason there's this really resolute rejection of the executive order is because what they can't afford to do is violate the Constitution. And there have been numerous federal courts, including just this week, a federal court in Rhode Island, that have found that ICE has overreached its authority in issuing these warrantless detainers and expecting local law enforcement to be complicit in violating individual constitutional rights. These so-called sanctuary cities are absolutely in the right when it comes to the legality of their policies.
But, of course, we've got this new push, and now you've got Senator Jeff Sessions in line. Donald Trump wants him as his attorney general, and he has been incredibly tough on immigration. Elizabeth in Quincy, Massachusetts. Elizabeth, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I am an undocumented student. I'm calling because I'm listening to all these arguments and stuff, and it's great, but at the same time, it's like a lot of people are focusing on, like, how the tax is going to come, how it's going to affect in a political way, money, economically. The thing is that people are not also focusing on, like, the psychological trauma that it's going to bring families. I mean, in my case, I'm undocumented. Mom is undocumented. My sister is a U.S. citizen. And what's happening is, like, you know, what's going to happen if, like, I have to go back to my country? I actually have DACA, so
yep.
We're asking for childhood arrival.
So you're undocumented, your mom is undocumented, your sister is a citizen.
Exactly.
What's your fear, Elizabeth?
My fear is, like, if today Trump takes the executive order, like, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my work permit? I'm going to school. I have a job. And then, like, I'm going to have to go back to my country. Like, my mom's going to have to go back to her country. She pays her taxes. She's a good citizen. If you put a background check on her, she's going to be fine. And so am I. I've had, like, 3 background checks already. And I work at the airport, and it's fine. So, I mean, like, people need to focus on, like, the psychological trauma. Like, I already have some. And I know a lot of people with mixed families that have citizenship is going to go through the same ordeal. And it's just not in the Latino community. It's, like, everywhere, like every single Albanian, Chinese, like you name it, it's going to bring like a lot.
Are you confident that under President Trump, your status here will be protected if you have a, you know, if you don't have any trouble with the law, criminal law, Elizabeth?
I feel threatened. I feel very threatened. I haven't been able to sleep. I haven't had, I don't know what's going to happen. It's just like it's really day by day. I don't know what's going to happen to me. I don't know what's going to happen to my family. What I do know is that I will fight it back because I'm a good person. I deserve to be here. I've been here for, I grew up in this country. I went to high, middle school, high school. I have friends. I have family here. I don't have anything in Peru. I like the last time I went last year, I had a panic attack. I don't feel like I could be there. This is my home.
Alan Gomez, speak to Elizabeth. You know, Peru doesn't feel like her home. America is her home, she says. Should she, need she feel threatened today?
I wish I could say no, but I can't. President Trump and White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer have talked a lot in the last couple of days about the president is not going to specifically target this group, referred to as Dreamers, recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, deportation protections under President Obama. They've talked about his big heart. They talked that he's a family man, that he's not going to target them because he understands that they have families and he hates breaking them apart. Yet in the executive order that he signed yesterday, and I'm reading from it here, it says, we cannot faithfully execute the immigration laws of the United States if we exempt classes or categories of removable aliens from potential enforcement. That to me is just yet another indication that sort of any undocumented immigrant in this country is a potential target. Whether they're going to try to round them up together in one big raid, I doubt that, but it does expose all of them.
Julie Myers Wood, do you see the legal framework for a wholesale deportation removal now?
I don't think the focus is on non-criminal individuals. I think the caller's comments and what Alan said kind of really point to how broken our system is. And while it is critical to remove those who are here without authorization and have committed crimes, it's also critical to look at all the individuals who, even though they have not come here the proper way, you know, have added significant value to our country. And so at this point, you know, we really need guidance from the president on how he's going to address these other groups. My hope very much is that while he has an enforcement push, and I think this enforcement push is critical, it's important to have, that he also looks at a way to appropriately address those who are in here and, frankly, to give more legal ways for folks to come in. Because I think that's a piece that's missing right now if you read the executive order, and that's a piece that really needs to be addressed.
So that all depends on where the push comes. The order is there. What emphasis will follow? We're still midstream in this story, but big moves already. We're learning day by day now. We're watching. We're watching closely security or sanctuary cities all over the country doing the same and critics of those cities doing the same. I want to thank all three of you for being with us. Julie Myers Wood, former Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Julie Myers Wood, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
Avida Mousavian at the National Immigration Law Center. Thank you, Avida.
Thanks so much, Tom.
And Alan Gomez at USA Today. Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.